Good afternoon. I'm Philip Donahue.
This hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Tuesday means we will be joined by Father Thomas Loya of TaborLife.org. He will be talking about theology of the body, as he often does, and exploring this question about, are people born this way, or does something else happen that makes this gender reorientation of same-sex attraction? We'll be discussing that. Should be a great conversation. Yesterday, I mentioned that we were going to talk about this, and then either I just forgot or got distracted in other things. But I think it's a really important exploration of why Mark Zuckerberg is meeting with Pope Francis regarding drones. And there's something very interesting to me to this that I think is worth really exploring and seeing what it could really mean, because technology as we know it is changing so rapidly, and the church has always been on the forefront of so much of that. I mean, we have a radio because of the Vatican radio. This is how it started. There was Marconi giving a tool to Pope, whatever his name was at the time. Forgive me for not knowing that. But could there be something similar here? I think it's very interesting. So we'll get into that and talk about what all that means in just a little bit more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Tuesdays mean we are joined by Father Thomas Loya of TaborLife.org. Father, how are you?
Very good, Leo. Good to be here.
Thanks for being with us. A couple of interesting topics. We want to talk a little bit about voter conscience and certainly leading into this election. What is a Catholic to do? We'll get to that. But you were asked by churchmilitant.org for their new Atlantis Journal to present your opinions as it comes to being born into sexual orientation. And certainly you've explored this tremendously as a priest and a practitioner and professional in theology of the body. So what do you think? Born this way or no?
Yeah, no.
Enough discussion. All right, we got it.
That's it. Yeah, I can move on.
Now back to the voter thing. Now, yeah. So why is it, Father, that it looks like that this is just completely hinged? I mean, this is the argument. It is the argument, yes. that it's nature nurture. No, it's always nature.
Right. We're not born. Well, okay. In the New Atlantis, it's the recent fall 2016 journal. It's a journal of technology and society. It's a special report called Sexuality and Gender: Findings from the Biological, Psychological, and Social Sciences. This is by Lawrence Mayer and Paul McHugh. And some of their findings are pretty much what I've always said, no, we are not born, so-called born this way. Our orientation, gender orientation, is not something that we're born with. Okay, we're born male or female, but in terms of are we born transgender? Are we born with same-sex attraction? No, we're not. And the reason why this is important, there's a lot of reasons why this is important. First of all, the studies that try to prove that people were born this way were actually skewed studies. In fact, they were done actually by homosexual activists. And when
like a Kinsey report almost, right?
Yeah,
Kinsey.
Yeah.
Because Kinsey, exactly, was so skewed toward deviance.
Exactly. And when honest scientists tried to reproduce those findings, they couldn't. You know, and now finally they've come out with this very definitive report here in this new Atlantis. And even if that were true, you know, what do we do if someone's born blind? What do they do if they're born, say, without arms or something? What is it that we do with people who are so-called born this way? If it was, let's say it is true. It's not true, but let's say it is.
Right.
What does society try to do in their compassionate response to that? They try to help this person move towards normality as much as possible, right? Like you produce things for blind people to help them walk on their own, right?
Right.
You get prosthesis for someone, or you redesign their car so that they have a. In fact, I have a relative who was born with no arms, just kind of like hands coming out of his chest. You know, well, he does fine because they redesigned the environment for them. And what do we praise all these athletes that, you know, oftentimes they lose a leg or something, they get a prosthesis and they run these races, you know, and we say, well, isn't that wonderful? They overcome their particular limitation. Well, so we did this as a culture. So it brings up the question, why is it then that we make an exception when it comes to this? Oh, well, they're born that way, and that's the end of the story. So they have to be that way.
Wow.
No, when you're born this way, if you're born in any way that is out of the order of things, what do we as a society, as a compassionate society, do? We try to bring you more and more towards the norm. So even if they say they're born this way, they contradict society's compassion by keeping them this way. Like, okay, you're born this way, therefore, everything about your lifestyle as a transgender person or a same-sex attraction person, everything about your lifestyle that you want is consistent with that. We bless. We affirm you in. Well, no, we don't do that for any other aspect of life where someone's born this way. We try to bring them towards the norm. So even if that were proven they were born this way, still it does not justify affirming them in these particular lifestyles, which are ultimately self-destructive, as these scientific studies have come out and said.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I haven't heard this premise presented in this fashion before. But one thing that I would say is another interesting analogy. What about kids who seem to be born with ADHD? Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
What do? We want to medicate them. We want to medicate them into normalcy. But if they're born, you know, let's affirm their gender orientation from the time they're 3 years old, and well, they don't want to be a boy, they want to be a girl. Okay, well then that we need to do that. But
right,
what if they were bouncing off the walls with hyperactivity? We'd put them on drugs.
Yeah.
We'd say,
exactly.
Oh, you know what? They need to be hyperactive. They were born this way. Let's encourage that. We don't do that.
Exactly. So exactly. So and again, as a compassionate society, we know that there is a norm. Again, it's like we have an innate theology of the body vision, that we know that there is an order of creation, there is a norm, and that when something is not according to that norm, we try to move it in that direction in whatever way that we can, and that's compassion. So why we're not, but yet we don't do it with this, which proves that it's really an ideology. They try to push an ideology, you know, not really being compassionate. And also we have to remember too that predisposition does not mean predetermination, meaning someone can have, and this is the closest you can come to so-called being born this way, and some, you know, well-meaning people actually confuse this line, that a person can have a predisposition which means they can have a certain sensitivity. This is why you find same-sex attraction a lot in people of the arts, because you have to have a certain sensitivity to be a musician, an artist, you know. And so that sensitivity can be a predisposition. Now, it can predispose you to developing same-sex attraction, but if certain things happen to you or don't happen to you, in accordance with your particular sensitivity. It doesn't mean that because you have these sensitivities, you're predetermined to become, to have same-sex attraction. It simply means that you're going to be more vulnerable to that if certain things happen to you and certain things don't, because of your sensitivities. In other words, we would call that in church thinking, we would call that your gifts. You have a gift to be a musician or artist, which really is a kind of a certain sensitivity. Now, on top of that, things can happen or things cannot happen that should happen developmentally, and that can then predispose you towards the same-sex attraction, but it doesn't predetermine you. And that's a big distinction. So predisposing is the closest you can come to so-called being born this way. But it's a huge, huge chasm between the two. You're not born this way. You're not predetermined. It's what happens to us along the way based on who we are, our sensitivities and so on. And this stuff really, Leo, ultimately, it comes down to much more fundamental human needs. It's not, see the sexual thing, you know, that you end up as transgender or same-sex attraction, those are actually a translating out. It's a psychological translating out of what is actually a more fundamental wound. And that wound has to do with acceptance as a person. It's on the level of the person. And that's what John Paul talked about all the time in his theology of the body, that personalistic norm. The baseline is persons. How are we what do we need as persons? How do we identify ourselves as persons? How are we treated as persons? And that then starts to determine whether we develop other things that really are translations that stem from woundedness on the level of the person.
Father Thomas Lilly with us this afternoon, TaperedLife.org. Father, and you know, I've heard this defended repeatedly, but it's kind of like, I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. John Sarno. He's a doctor who has looked extensively at back pain. And, you know, those of us who have suffered crippling and debilitating back pain, we will find any solution imaginable to alleviate that. So I'm like, oh, read this guy's book, see what it's all about. And there are those who think he's kind of quackish because he basically says this is psychosomatic and it's a symptom of something deeper inside you, frustration, pent-up aggression, all of this stuff that you don't let out, and then it manifests in this muscle spasm that you think you've hurt yourself, and you haven't. It's just the way your body reacts. It could be ulcers, it could be back pain, whatever. And he says, you know, it's going to find a way. It's going to do its thing some way, somehow. And it's kind of what I hear you saying, that there's something that relationally is not there, something that is malfunctioned or malnormative in that early development, that typically first 8 years of childhood. It's going to do something. It's going to find another way of doing something, and that's how it ends up. And that's why all they can think about is, well, I've always felt this way. But that's all they know. They can't necessarily pinpoint. And the same with us with back pain. We're like, I think I may have hurt my back. You know, we'll make things up, right? Whatever.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We do carry out, see, we're psychosomatic persons. We do carry out in physical areas those stressors and stresses that are of a psycho-spiritual nature. They will manifest itself in certain areas of our body. So the doctor's actually right. In fact, I knew of a woman who was a chiropractor, but she did her therapy based on this. She could identify, like she could heal people from maladies in internal organs based on identifying the stress, or where they're carrying out that particular stress in that particular organ of her body, not just the muscles, but also the organs, like the kidneys. Wow. Like she can associate different kinds of stress according to the different organs of the body. And it was actually very effective. And so it's true. It really is true. It's a translating out of something that has a more fundamental origin. And so the key, if you really be compassionate to people, if you want to work with them therapeutically, you trace back to that original baseline. You don't deal with it just in the area of sexuality. Sexuality is like the symptom. It's not the origin of it, and it's not the predetermined situation of that person. I recommend we've got to go break.
We're coming up. Okay. We'll talk more in just a moment. Father Thomas Loya with us this afternoon, TaperLife.org. More in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. Redbox Media, now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our Friend of the Show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the Show premium memberships exclusively for you with Redbox Media. Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost Hour Culture, Current Events, Hour Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Father Thomas Loya joins us on Tuesdays. And Father, before the break, we were talking, well, in the first segment, we were talking about this concept of sexual orientation kind of being innate, being part of nature, born that way. And you were finishing up a thought there before we went to break. So I wanted to let you do that.
Yeah, just real quickly, a good film. It's about a half hour long that I recommend to people. It's been out for a while. It's called The Third Way. And the reason why I recommend that is because it's testimonies by people who had through their lives that said they had same-sex attraction. But what's really good about the movie is these people are giving testimonies, very deep, sincere, heartbreaking, heart-wrenching, beautiful testimonies. And all of them, if you look at their testimonies, the one thing that they do in there is they do, when you really listen to them, they all arrive at the same point. Their common point, really, as you listen to their testimonies, is that fundamental baseline I'm talking about, that they can trace back to where their wounds first started. And it was way back in the sense of their self as a person.
Wow. You know,
where the wounds started to happen. Like maybe they're a little bit different. Okay, the boy was maybe not as rough and tumble as the other boys, like that. Okay, well, right away then he started to get the message of being unaccepted, not measuring up. You know, there's the wound before there was even any sexuality, see? And each one of them, their stories, it really worked it back to that baseline. So that's another good example if you want to see an actual testimony of what we're saying here. It's called The Third Way. It's a great film.
Good deal.
About half an hour.
All right. And Father, we want to talk a little bit this afternoon as we move through this, in my opinion, the most interesting of all election cycles I've ever seen. And, you know, I've decided to vote third party, and I've gotten a lot of flack about that. But I have to vote as a Catholic on my principles. And to me, I don't see them matching up with either of these candidates or either of the major political parties. But you want to talk a little bit about faithful citizenship and what we need to think about as Catholic voters.
Well, it's interesting, Leo, that you brought that up about a third party, because what...
The third way. I'm sorry.
The third way, yeah. Yeah.
It applies to this as well.
It does, yeah. Because you're looking for a baseline. You know, you're going back to the baseline. It's not in either party. It's not in any party as the faithful. The, you know, the bishops have a great document, Faithful Citizenship, that they put out, and they say that we're not about a party. We're about moral principles. You know, and that's the baseline, and the baseline is that. Basically, there are certain priorities that we have, and there's basically four. First of all, we protect human life. Okay, this is the Catholic ethos. We protect human life, we protect family life, we pursue social justice, and we practice global solidarity. Now, that's our baseline. That's our where we go to our baseline. Now, from there, you look and say, okay, how do we vote? Well, In going back to what you said about a third way here, I'm kind of that way in a sense that if someone asks me, who are you for, Father, I'm never for any candidate because no candidate is truly Catholic, and that's why I would be for. And what I mean by Catholic, I'm not talking in terms of a religion. I'm talking about the fact that, you know, this guy, you know, does everything Catholic according to the Bible. Now, I'm talking about a worldview. The Catholic worldview is, as a worldview, which is really what our faith is, there's only one way to see life in its most fullest perspective, its most accurate, most honest way. And that is the way that we could call Catholic. That's what Catholic really is. It's the worldview. And seldom, if ever, do we have a candidate that's presented to us that really has that Catholic worldview. And so we have to choose, we have to vote for somebody, so we end up voting to who we think comes closest to that. And the thing is, we get into these really, sometimes very animated arguments with people and so on, and we have to realize that we should never judge someone else's vote, because another Catholic, two Catholics will vote for two different candidates. I was sitting with some good Catholic friends of mine just the other day, and they said, oh my gosh, they went off on Trump. He said, he's the Antichrist. And they didn't say a word about Hillary. He just said, he's the Antichrist. Now, I sat there as a priest, you know, and I could have said, well, wait a minute. You know, Hillary's not pro-life, whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't butt in because you see, neither candidate, you can go back and forth with either candidate, and no one's going to fit the bill. No one's going to fit the bill of what we really know as Catholic, and that really goes according to these four principles. So, but we all have to come in at somebody, and we come as closest as we can according to our understanding of being Catholic. So the first thing is we shouldn't condemn or judge one another for who we vote for, who we don't vote for, and we can't be dogmatic about any one party. You know, Leo, you're probably too young to remember. I remember my earliest years as a kid, but certainly our parents remember, you know, the Catholic priest would get up there at the pulpit and say, you better vote Democrat or it's a sin. You know, I mean, they could actually get away with that back then. I remember that, you know.
Sure. That because, was pre-Johnson, right? I mean, that would have been before the Johnson administration did what he did to squelch that, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. Because they felt free. Because at that time, mm-hmm. there was more of a sense of what seemed to line up closer with the Catholic values.
The common man. The Democrat Party was the party of the common man, and that was the Catholic, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So you can get away with that then, but mm-hmm. that doesn't exist now. Both parties have changed a lot, you know, and there's no one person or party that embraces all that we espouse as Catholic. What we're supposed to believe in. So we're supposed to be as responsible as possible. The document doesn't tell you who to vote for. If you read the document, you can read the document one way and say, oh, see, they're pointing it to being a Republican. Another, you can read it again and say, oh, now the other, and it sounds like they're pointing it to be a Democrat. You know, well, it's neither, not pointing in any direction. Mm-hmm. They're trying to give you the basic principles to vote, like you said, you know, according to conscience, to be a faithful citizen. You should vote to be a faithful, responsible citizen, but you need to try to, first of all, you have to understand what really is Catholic. Don't start with political parties, but start with what is really Catholic, and then do the best you can from that standpoint. Don't condemn someone for who they voted for or didn't vote for, because sometimes, like this couple I was talking to, they were speaking out of what they thought was really being Catholic, so they thought Trump was the Antichrist, you know.
So
I'm not going to condemn them because they're voting out of the same ethos I am, meaning what we think is really Catholic. It's just a matter of how complete we are in that way, in that understanding. But unfortunately, we're never really given the Catholic choice, you know. Really not. You know, you just don't see that in any candidate. The full package of what Catholic really is, and it would follow these principles. So my advice would be read this document, really come to understand what Catholic is. Don't sift it through a particular party. Don't associate any one party with maybe before the Democrat was closer to us, but it certainly is not now, nor is the Republican, you know, nor is any particular party. And then do the best you can in conscience.
And you know what I find interesting? I was looking at this. When you see where the platform issues were between Donald Trump being pro-abortion, for instance, and Hillary Clinton being pro-traditional marriage at one time and pro-Second Amendment, 20 years ago, you could flip-flop these candidates and they could be each other's opponent on different teams. Hillary would qualify for the GOP 20 years ago, and Trump would qualify for the Democrat nominee 20 years ago. I mean, so it's crazy. But and that's why, I mean, things change. Even the what should be principled issues, people change, parties change, but the church does not. And I think that's what we can always come back to and trust. And yeah, I love what you said about, because, you know, I've always understood subsidiarity and solidarity, but you added global solidarity. And I think that there's something, when you think about subsidiarity, this is the local as it possibly can be. Family is where it starts. But then you go, but we've got to be connected on a global level because we are Catholic. We have that universal understanding. Then you look at, and I've always seen those two as kind of parallel tracks as being on the same sort of parallel. Then the human dignity and the Common Good as these two parallel tracks, kind of a similar sort of thing. There's the local to the global there as well. So I think that's what's beautiful about this all-encompassing understanding. And as I said before, that it may look like it's broad and it may look like it's wide, which it is, but it's so specific. It's so specific what we believe that the platform issues, the left, the right politics, the Republican, Democrat, it can't fit into that specificity. It just cannot, because there are things that fall outside of solidarity or fall outside of subsidiarity or fall outside of the common good or the human dignity. And you can't have that. You can't let those things fall away like that. That doesn't mean you can't vote a party line. You can do that. And we're not saying you can't, but you can't put a party through that door. You just can't.
Right, exactly. And that's the dilemma for Catholics, you know, voting. That's why.
Believe me.
It's tough.
Darn hard.
In fact, that's why the bishops came out with this, because I think they realize it's darn hard. Because, like you said, things spill out on either side. You know, they're not complete, you know, and you try to do the best you can with it. But in this particular election, too, it's hard. It makes it even harder.
It's the toughest I've personally experienced, right? And I've always taken my faith seriously. I've been Catholic for 15 years and evangelical for 5 before that. I've always put my faith into the voting booth with me. But this time it's just, that's what I say. I mean, I can't look at, I don't like Trump or Clinton. I like them both equally to equal degrees of dislike. And I had to go with a third party to find somebody who I felt like had principles that I could trust. Father, we're out of time. God bless you. Thank you for being with us.
Okay.
We'll talk next week. More to come in a moment. I'm back after this.
Well, stop.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back in Leo Brown. Leo Brown on the Sour. Yeah, I mentioned this yesterday, and then I said I was going to talk about it, and then I don't know. I guess in my usual style of distraction, I completely forgot or got to so many other things that it just didn't, I didn't get there. But I think it's interesting because now we've got the FAA. Now this is the Federal Aviation Administration in our country allowing drone use commercially that would allow registration of drones and then these drones to be flown at a higher altitude than generally had been allowed, and perhaps opening the door for those delivery drones that have been talked about for such a long time. I think Amazon had tested some of these. Now it looks like it might be more of a reality that we can place the order on Amazon and within 30 minutes or less, it's like a pizza. You could order your pizza from Amazon, right? I mean, why not? Drone flies down, delivers this to your house. So the question is, is the next cottage industry designing drone chutes, right? Just drop that in the chute, shink, slides down, pops down into the living room. There, huh? Delivery's here. You see, you don't even have to go outside anymore. Drone just drops it down the chute. There it is. why not? I think I'm going to start the specs on it right now. I think it's a pretty good idea. Yeah, I just got a little hole here. Yeah, that's all right. We got a sawzall. All will be good. Sawzall, some caulk. Yeah, a little bit of sheet metal. We got you a drone shoot. You'll be fine. So, Mark Zuckerberg and Pope Francis met recently. And I think there's significance here for a number of reasons. One is, I know that there are those who still kind of have a, maybe like, still kind of a question about technology. Like, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to last. I was talking to someone the other day who said he doesn't even have email because convinced that, I don't know, it's just, that's a fad. I thought that was funny. But the reality is that this is not only here to stay, but it is life-changing, no doubt. And especially when we can do the kind of things we do here with Breadbox Media. It's a radio station that's in an app that's delivered via technology. And this is something that was unheard of just a few years ago, doing what we do, completely out of the realm of possibilities. Now it's a reality. And then when you consider what Facebook has done for connectivity, and you know, I know that there are a few, I believe, and only a few, quite honestly, individuals who are somehow anti-Facebook, right? Ah, that Facebook. Ah, yeah, kind of got to put a growl in there, too. Ah. Because they think it's just bad. All social media is bad. And I know people like that, and they're convinced that if there's evil in the world, it's because of social media. If evil is committed, if evil exists, it's all the fault of social media sites. But these are tools. It's just how we use them. That's what it's about. Now, I posted a video. It's on my Facebook page. You can dig down far enough and find it. But there's a guy playing a gas can guitar. It's a gas can, and he's got a stick on the end, and he's fashioned some sort of fret concept of some sort out of wire wrapped around this stick. And I don't know if he's got a string or two. I'm not sure what it is. But he's rocking it out, playing the gas can guitar with a stick as a neck. And it's amazing. And it just goes to show it's not what it is you've got, it's how you use it. So anything could be good or bad. Most things, and I'd almost be willing to say all inanimate objects, but I don't know, because I think some inanimate objects are designed for specific use. So there are some things that are, it would be a stretch for me to say all inanimate objects are morally neutral. I don't think that, because immediately as I think that, some things come to mind, and I'm like, oh, that's not morally neutral. Those things are what, yeah, so I'm not getting into that. But anyway, drones, morally neutral. Internet, morally neutral. Social media, morally neutral. Undoubtedly, we can see those categories and say there's some degree of neutrality here that allows the use of these devices to be either moral or immoral. Drones could be used very immorally, right? They're used for in airstrikes. They're used to kill people at close range with very, it's a sneak attack. It's an ambush. And then, bam, here's a drone, and people are killed by them, and our military uses them. Is that moral? I don't think so. I think that's an immoral use of drone technology. But oftentimes, it's the military use. And my son, who researches things all the time, I love the fact he teaches me all the time. Our oldest son, who is 9, was telling me about remote control cars because he's fascinated by drones, and he was doing some research apparently on the internet about remote control cars. And he said, as he told me, and I'm like, I got no reason to doubt that. I guess that's the way it worked. He said it was World War II technology, basically, that developed all remote control vehicles, all RC cars that we have today, was because they would drive bombs into enemy territory or fly, perhaps. I don't know if it was a remote control planes, but I think he was more referring to like remote control cars that would drive the bombs in on a remote control. So then we have toys now that came from weaponry, which is interesting. Which the same is true of drones, because drones are toys, which I think they were designed for as weaponry, and now they're going to be more and more and more integrated into our lives, to where there'll be surveillance drones, no doubt. There will be delivery drones. And then what Zuckerberg was there meeting with Pope Francis about was there are Wi-Fi drones, which of all of them, this excites me the most, quite honestly. And there will come a day very soon, because they've already developed the technology, they've tested this, and generally by the time you see it roll out at this point, it's already been pretty darn well put together. And we're going to see the drones that will fly. What I've heard is 7 miles high, which is a little bit above the FAA restrictions. So there's going to have to be some sort of special permissions for this. But the goal is to get Wi-Fi access to the remotest areas of the world. And to me, this is why this is so important to us as Catholics. And, you know, Zuckerberg introducing this to Pope Francis, I think, is an amazing gesture of what this means, right? Because we talked with, well, I talked extensively about this yesterday, and I talk often about this understanding of the four non-negotiables. They're not called that, but we always like to talk about non-negotiables, apparently. Well, no negotiating on that, which actually, there are four foundational principles. I prefer to speak of them that way. But when it comes to the human dignity, common good, solidarity, subsidiarity, you look at the common good especially. And I would even say solidarity. You can go as far as subsidiarity. Human dignity, sure, it's not compromised in this. But I think of the four, I look at the common good, and I think that this is where this falls. This drone technology falls directly into that, because providing technology, communication, access, connectivity into areas that normally would not have it, that's building the common good. And for Zuckerberg to do what he's doing when he doesn't have to, right? And let's face it, he could retire now as a young man, stop doing anything, and never have to worry financially another day in his life. He could go on the lecture series if he wants, join the ranks of Bill Clinton. He can make millions of dollars doing that. But what he's doing is putting his brilliance of creative technology to work, and this will improve the lives of those who get to experience this. And I think this is beautiful. I think it's great that Pope Francis had this meeting with him, and what it can mean for us as evangelists, right? What it can mean for us as a global community, which we are as Catholics, with this connectivity, because now we can say the entire globe is connected, because that's what Zuckerberg wants to do. He's going to say, oh, if there's no access to Wi-Fi, we're going to create it. We're going to give them that. It's pretty cool. So don't fear this technology. It's important, and it's useful, and it will be used for the common good. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. Back tomorrow afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless you.